Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, this is Dally, and you're listening to the Fear the Sword podcast.
David, the Cavs are picking number 5 overall. They are not going to get Zion Williamson. It was an eventful draft lottery. Where do you stand on where the Cavs are at right now and what they're getting in this pick?
I know like math is math, so we had as good of a chance at Zion as anybody, but 14% is just not really that high. And I think the Cavs were supposed to, the most likely result was the 5th pick, and that's what they ended up getting. So, congrats to the NBA. They sort of got what they wanted. If the new, if the old lottery rules were in place, I think the lowest we could be right now is 4th. It's not a bad place to be. I think once you get past that 5th or 6th spot, I think it goes down a little bit in quality. Most people seem to think, there's one tier for Zion and another tier for Morant and Barrett. And then you've got sort of Culver and DeAndre Hunter and, the point guard out of North Carolina. So the Cavs are going to have some options. Certainly, it wasn't the worst case scenario. So I think they should feel okay.
I think they should feel all right, too. I think, you and I haven't talked in a while, just so people know, like Dave and I have both just been a bit busy with adult life things postseason, but we're going to get back into a more normal schedule up until I get married in late June. And David has his own thing that I won't say because I don't know if he wants to. It's up to him if he wants to publicly disclose that. But the Cavs are in a spot where, like, this, I think, the conjunction with the John Beilein hire and them picking 5th, I think to me is an indication that, like, they really have to get good at player development. You're looking at the core of their team outside of, Kevin Love and Larry Nance is going to be a number 8 overall pick in Sexton. Jetty Osman, who was the first pick in the second round the year he was drafted. The number 26 pick this year. The number 5 pick this year. And maybe Ante Zizic, if you think of him as part of your future, which we don't really know if they do or not. So picking 5 is not a guarantee that you're going to get a star or an all-star. Greg Schwartz tweeted out, I thought, the last 5, and I thought it was just kind of worth noting that, because the last 5 number 5 overall picks in reverse order were Trae Young, De'Aaron Fox, Chris Dunn, Mario Hezonja, and Dante Exum. That's a mixed bag. There are 2 really good players in that list. There are 3 guys who you'd be kind of bummed out if he was your 5th overall pick. So this is not easy, but some of that can be contextual. Some of that can be, bad drafting. This is a pick I think the Cavs have to nail if they're going to build things the way they seem to want to be building them.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get right, but all we're talking about are years of an NBA season, right? So we just watched, I think net rating wise, the worst NBA team. And this is what you need the payoff to be. So it's okay if you get it wrong. It just means that this year wasn't, worth what it could have been or as helpful as it could have been. So there is a lot riding on it, and you're right. It's certainly not a given, but it's not a given if you pick 2nd, and it's not a given if you pick 3rd, and it's not a given if you pick anywhere, really. Which again is not to say, you would always rather pick fourth, then fifth, and you know, you end up where you end up. But you know, they have to trust their scouting ability. You know, I think it seems like we're getting a little bit better at scouting, but then you know, you see a guy like you know, Doncic fall last season. So that being said, I think if you look at the top six of last year's draft, I think most teams still have reason to feel, you know, okay about what they did. So if the league's getting better at evaluating, you know, you would think that, you know, there's usually going to be, you know, at least 10 solid NBA players in a draft. So it's just, it's on the Cavs to find them.
When you look at this lottery, we'll get into a couple of names I think people should look out for, names that at least jump off to us. I think there's three that I think I will be thinking a lot about, but this also just ended up being a crazy lottery. If people didn't watch or went on Twitter, which I would guess that you were, the official draft order saw David Griffin and the New Orleans Pelicans go to number one. You already have a Mark Spears tweet being like Zion like was whisked away when he didn't go to the Knicks, so like that's very not great. The Grizzlies at 2, the Knicks at 3, LeBron's Lakers at 4, and the Cavs at 5, with Phoenix, Chicago, Atlanta, Washington, Atlanta again via Dallas, Minnesota, Charlotte, Miami, and Boston via Sacramento as the draft order. I feel like the Cavs aren't like the biggest loser. I think Phoenix and the Bulls in particular are big losers. You know, Atlanta at 8 and 10 is, I think, another loser because they could have had like a really interesting situation. But you know, that's not, at least they do have two picks and maybe they can do something with those. I feel like obviously the big winner is David Griffin in this, and I feel good for Griff, frankly. You know, even though like it's a weird thing, like this is going to get real complicated because of AD and what people thought Zion could be as a trade chip. But like I'm happy for Griff at least, and I was here for the chaos of this draft order.
Yeah, and it's fine. Zion's not, you know, thrilled, or you know, if it's a shock to him, he's on national TV. He's, you know, 18, 19, you know, years old. I don't think people assumed that the Pelicans were going to get the number one pick. You know, if he, you know, was sort of a deer in headlights, yeah, I think 98% of us would have been. Now, if all of his people were telling him, oh, you're going to the Knicks, you're going to the Knicks, that's dumb in the first place, because if the Knicks get that first round pick, there's a pretty good chance he gets traded to the Pelicans. So, you know, it's kind of like one of those situations where with Wiggins seemed to be blindsided by the fact that the Cavs were going to trade him. And, you know, it's not necessarily his fault that he's blindsided by it, but people around him need to sort of be explaining, okay, you know, here are the possible outcomes. And, Zion has plenty of time to get used to being a New Orleans Pelican, or maybe not. Maybe he'll be traded, you know, somehow. If Anthony Davis says, you know, I want to win right now, if we stay, maybe they move him. I don't think they would do that. It's hard to see that happening. But it's a weird league and crazy things can happen. And one of those crazy things is the Pelicans winning the lottery.
All right, so what for you is the – let's just start with this as a groundwork. What do you think is the positional need for the Cavs as they enter the draft lottery? Like, what would you say like their like their big need at 5 that you would like to see them address is?
Well, it goes back to this, the same thing. You know, the overarching So the overarching problem with the Cavs, right, is that they don't have any stars. So because they don't have any stars, they can improve at every single position, and that would be great. You know, so they could draft anybody at any position. You know, theoretically, if Colin Sexton's a point guard, that might be your lowest need, just in terms of, you know, helping build around and with him, you know, or if you're just looking at purely the best player, you know, Kevin Love is your power forward / center, so you might not need that. They actually have some playmaking, you know, wings. But, you know, I think that's sort of what you'd be looking for. projecting wing, and you hope that somebody can grow into it at a high level. For me, I would guess that's Jarrett Culver, but they can look at a few different guys.
I think for me, it's wing. So if you're looking at the draft board, it's guys like Jarrett Culver, guys like DeAndre Hunter, guys that's what they do, and that is their just kind of baseline level skill set. For me, I think those are the guys you 100% should be targeting because that's what this roster needs. Now, I will say that the caveat here is that, like, if John Beilein, who we don't know a ton about what he thinks of the roster yet, what he thinks of Colin Sexton in particular, decide, hey, like, I think Colin can play for me. I think he can be a guy that fits what I do, but it's not to be the lead guard, which I ask a lot of. Maybe that brings in a Coby White or a Darius Garland or someone else into that conversation. But for me, I think if you're looking at them building a modern team, building a team that can kind of maximize already what it already has and do some interesting stuff in terms of positional versatility and also just like building in a way that will give them some depth at positions they don't have right now. I think it's 100% Jarrett Culver, DeAndre Hunter. You know, if that Cam Reddish, that name's going to come up, even though he's very underwhelming. Those are the kind of names where I think we're going to be looking at, because I think when you look at the draft order as it is, I think we can say very clearly Zion is off the board. Barrett and Morant both seem to be off the board 2 and 3, regardless of where they go. 4 is obviously a wild card with LA, but I think the Cavs should be at the very least be in a position to take the kind of guy like a Hunter, like a Culver that they like. I think 5 is at least they're ahead of teams like Phoenix, Chicago, and Atlanta. Even if the disorder isn't perfect, they at least are ahead of the type of teams that might have been selecting similar guys to them.
Yeah, I mean, they will get they will get at least a choice of between Hunter and Culver. Now, they might not do that. They've surprised us many, many times, but they do have that shot. So hopefully they take it, you know, in my opinion, but I've been wrong about lots of things. So, you know, maybe Coby Altman falls in love with somebody, or Mike Gansey does, or Dan Gilbert does. Who knows? But they got a lot of guys in that office. I think people are excited. I don't think there's a way to necessarily look at the Cavs front office and say that it's running poorly. I don't know how involved the, you know, Coby Altman was in hiring John Beilein, but you know, John Beilein obviously felt good enough about the structure that he was, you know, willing to leave a pretty good Michigan situation to go there. So no reason to be negative right now, I don't think.
You say that now, and then the Cavs are going to take, like, like Seka Demboya or, like, Cam Reddish or, like, do something crazy. Like, they're going to take Bol Bol at 5, and are going to be like, well, like, maybe them, like, having to make a tough decision, like, isn't great for them.
Yeah, and I, you know, last year in the draft, I thought Kevin Knox, you know, I didn't really follow it that closely, to be honest, but, you know, I looked at the potential tools of a Kevin Knox and his size and his shooting ability and the body that he had for defending, and that was kind of who I wanted. And I came into this year thinking the same about Cam Reddish. Like, you know, if we end up in that 3, 4, 5 draft spot, Cam Reddish is going to be the guy that I want. But I just think we're getting the point, whether it's Harrison Barnes or Wiggins or, you know, any of these wings, like, I need to start seeing them do stuff in college. Like, I'm not just drafting somebody based on, and I have a little bit of that worry with RJ Barrett because he didn't perform to the level people wanted, but he did have an extremely high usage rate, and he did have, you know, he did move the ball and he did set teammates up. So he wasn't, you know, somebody who just sort of faded into the background. I guess it doesn't matter because the Cavs don't have a shot at him anymore anyway. But my point is, I'm really just looking for guys who do stuff, that are active and, you know, get rebounds, and, you know, assists are not a good metric, but that move the ball and, you know, have good court vision. So, you know, I think that's Jarrett Culver, and I think DeAndre Hunter does a lot of that, but Cam Reddish really scares me.
Yeah, Cam Reddish scares me as well. And Trevor Magnotti, who I trust, you know, immensely with draft stuff, is just like not about him either. So I think that factors into my opinion there as well. All right, let's talk about John Beilein. So the draft, we're gonna have a ton of time to talk about the draft. There's a bunch of stuff that we'll get into. Where are you at? Where are you? You and I haven't exactly talked about this at all. We've had like a very sort of I think kind of passive Fear the Sword kind of chat in our little G chat about this. But where are you at on John Beilein right now, as we're a day removed from his hiring?
You know, as far as a Dan Gilbert hire goes, I think this is about as good as it gets. And it might be, you know, a Mike Gansey hire because he played for him. And, you know, this is a guy who's worked his way all the way up and, you know, seems to be pretty open-minded in terms of playing the modern game and, you know, playing for spot-up shots and using the pick and roll and, you know, modern NBA concepts. So I'm reasonably happy about that. I don't really care about going for the big name, and there's an element of that to this. But he's been successful everywhere he went, and he's been successful at some schools that aren't exactly basketball schools either. So, you know, of the Dan Gilbert hires, I think this is about as good as it gets.
Yeah, I will point out that there was this Orion Tsang, who covers Michigan for the Free Press in Detroit, he talked to, he was at the draft lottery. He talked to John Beilein a bit, and this is a quote that I thought stood out about from John Beilein. There's a bunch there. I will link to this in the show notes of this podcast, but he said, quote, "I did not know him at all," in reference to Dan Gilbert, Michigan State guy. "But once we met, I think we hit it off right away." I think with that, and I think all of the stuff that is out there about Mike Gansey being the connection there, about, there's like a Terry Pluto story today about how like Kobe Altman met John Beilein at a wedding a couple years ago and like became fascinated with his basketball mind. There are like those types of leaks and stories out there that the narrative they're, I think, smartly trying to sort of push is that this wasn't a Dan Gilbert thing, that this is part of the process, that this is part of the culture they're trying to build. And I think that is a sellable thing. I think it's a smart thing to do. Certainly, I think there is information out there that like Gilbert was meeting with Beilein concurrently to those interviews going on at Denver. So like there's certainly, I think, Dan's influence is here. I think Beilein's an interesting hire. I think there's a lot we're just going to have to see how it goes before we can really sort of evaluate him. For me, it just kind of came out of the field. I've written about this a bit, but I think it's interesting, and you know, I'm skeptical of the college coach transition. I think it will be an adjustment, but that's why, like, I think getting JB Bickerstaff makes sense, and I think doing that kind of stuff should help John Beilein. And by all accounts, he's really, really smart at basketball stuff, and like knows what he's doing, and has things that are going to fit the NBA. So I think that is at least interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think those are all the things that the Cavs should do. But they've always had a pretty good communication staff, and maybe it's true. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they're not making those things up.
No, I'm not saying they are.
So, you know, I agree with you. I would assume that there will be an adjustment period. You know, he had those comments where he said he has to learn like the NBA, you know, lingo, and, you know, I think it's going to be, you know, he's going to have an adjustment, you know, learning how to deal with veterans that don't rely on him for his scholarship offer. It's a different world. There's just there's a different power and structure in the college game. Coaches have a lot of power. In the NBA, they just don't. So I'm sure he knows that as well as anybody, because he's in and around the NBA game. He doesn't strike me as the sort of like insecure power hungry person as like Rick Pitino is, but I do think he is a control freak, which a lot of the best coaches are. And so it'll be interesting to see how he balances needing to have control with the NBA game where that's largely impossible. So we'll see.
Yeah, I think the last thing I'll say in Beilein, we're going to talk about him a bunch more. I think, you know, what he does and sort of how he approaches this will be really interesting. I just, like, think there are really interesting fits with him in terms of, like, the personality thing. I think it's something you hit on correctly. Like, I just, like, think about, like, the him and, like, the Jordan Clarkson connection. I think that's fascinating. I think, like, what he thinks of Sexton will be quite interesting. I think, you know, like, what, you know, he said he's talked to Kevin Love. I'm going to pull up the exact quotes because Orion had these quotes. So he said, so basically he's like, he's talked to Kevin Love, like he's had a chance to like touch base with Kevin. You know, I talked to Kevin Love today, got a lot of guys with great experience, especially winning, talked to all the players today. I feel a good karma right now. He said they're going to shape the roster. There's good young players. I think that's sort of what they're asking him to do. But I think, like, we need to see what happens with Sexton, what happens with Love, with Jetty. There's just, like, stuff I want to see how he approaches them. And it's and I just, like, will he coach Summer League? Like, there's just a lot of little stuff I want to see how it plays out. I think that's what's really interesting about this. I think if it was, like, Jordy Fernandez, we would certainly have these same sort of evaluation points. But I think because Beilein does come from a different background, I think, than we are expecting, it's going to be a really interesting thing to watch unfold. It's unorthodox, and that the Cavs hiring someone who is like sort of unorthodox in terms of the hire, even if he was like on the radar of other NBA teams or whatever, that doesn't surprise me either. And I think it's something that, you know, it either works or it doesn't, but I think, you know, they hired David Blatt last time. That was certainly unorthodox, even if there was a lot of push for him to get a chance to do that. So I've come to be really intrigued by it more than I was when I initially got that Woj bomb notification.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe this is a hot take, I don't know. If I were him, I would not coach Summer League. If I were him, I would just go and watch how the players interact there and how the players party there and look at how Colin plays and get a sense for how whatever assistant coach is there coaches. And, you know, be around the practices, maybe run the practices or watch how the practices are run and just relax. And again, I'm guessing he's a bit of a control freak. That will probably be very difficult, but he has to start somewhere. And you know, if he was willing to take a step back and watch and learn a little bit from the beginning, that would be a good sign to me.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think the practicing will also be interesting because, like, college teams practice way more than NBA teams do just by the sheer schedule. Like, how that impacts Beilein will be really interesting. That's why I think, like, someone like JB Bickerstaff, I mean, Bernie Bickerstaff is in the organization. You know, someone who come in and sort of, like, help him, even though he is, like, a very experienced coach, someone who, like, knows the NBA grind, I think would be just a really invaluable thing on his staff, especially if he just doesn't seem like a guy to me either that is going to have an ego about this. And I think that, like, I was talking about this, can't even remember with who, but, like, David Blatt had, like, a lot of, I don't know what it was, but he was just, like, very defensive about, like, his skill level and his comfort and stuff, about, like, the NBA transition, and I don't think that helped him.
No.
I feel like with Beilein, it's going to be the opposite. That's the vibe I'm getting.
Well, yeah, and I'm sure Dan Gilbert will, I would assume that he would help him with that, you know, and I think David Blatt, you know, would, you know, be antagonistic with the media about things that were kind of crazy to
literally
be
literally anything about. That he could.
Yeah, and, you know, maybe that was his way of being comfortable and maybe the way that, you know, media was done in other places, but it just was unnecessary here. And it was, like, really fun for a lot of Cavs Twitter because hating on media is fun. Browns Twitter likes nothing more than it. But Cavs Twitter used to be a lot like that. And, okay, but they're Pyrrhic victories because, like, okay, like, you owned the media guy, but, like, when the leaks start coming out against you, who do you go to? Who's going to get your message out? Is it the guy that, you know, is the guy from the Akron Beacon Journal that you just zinged, you know, before the game for asking what the starting lineup is? He's probably not going to be very interested in helping you out. So it just, you just burn bridges that you don't need to burn. And, you know, it is what it is.
David, any final takes, any gut feelings you got coming out of this day, out of Beeline, out of the draft lottery? Where just you at right now with where the Cavs are really starting off their offseason with two pivotal things happening within, you know, about 24 hours of each other?
I'm just going to say not really about the Cavs necessarily, but it's a tough result, I think, for the Knicks, because even though they could have fallen farther, I think they had two really good scenarios. One would have been winning the lottery or getting the top three, which they came close. But with the Pelicans winning, I think it makes it less likely that the Knicks are in a position to trade for Anthony Davis, either because the Pelicans no longer want to trade Anthony Davis, or you know, David Griffin can somehow convince him to hang tight for a while, or because they simply don't have as valuable of a of a trade. You know, if the Knicks had won, I really would have been leaning towards, you know, somehow a Kyrie, KD, AD link up in New York. It's hard to see that happening that easily now.
Yeah. So we'll for the Cavs, I'll just say I think they're doing things interestingly. I think I'm intrigued by how they are approaching this. We need to see what happens with the draft. We need to see what happens with Beeline and the rest of his coaching staff. There's a lot of other really interesting things to come, but I think it's a good first 24 hours. I don't think the picking fifth is a disaster by any means. It's not the most fun. You know, it's not Zion. It's not RJ. It's not Ja. But I think it could be something for the Cavs, and I think it'll be a test of really what they are kind of going to do. And if they're up for the way that they've been, this is like where the Cavs and their stated goal of how they want to rebuild, this is the type of stuff that will decide if they're up for that or not. And I'm very interested in finding out. But find David on Twitter at David Zavok. David, as always, man, thanks so much.
Hey, good call. Talk to you guys soon.
This has been The Bottom, a Fear the Sword podcast. We will be back soon. We will not disappear from your feeds for as long as we did this time. But check out Fear the Sword, a whole bunch of great stuff we have over there. And have a great Wednesday. Enjoy thinking about mock drafts and picking fifth and all that kind of stuff. And stay here for all the craziness that is surely to come out of this draft order as well. Talk to you soon.